Brought to you by Burr Foreman and broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Results Matter Radio. Thanks to our good friends at Burr and Foreman. How you doing, Stone?
I am doing well, and I have been looking forward to this segment. We've got a studio full, man. Two or three of these folks have their own entourage.
I know. It's important to have an entourage.
So a little bit later, we're going to get a chance to visit with our old friend Michelle Morgan. We're going to talk to the guy from Silver Pop. But first up on Results Matter this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce CFO, COO with North Highland, Mr. Kirk Hancock. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Now, my wife has a real job. She's a consultant. So we've heard of North Highland. Fantastic reputation. But for the two or three listeners out there that might not know too much about North Highland, how about giving us just a little bit of a overview, thumbnail sketch, if you would?
Sure, thanks. North Highland, we're a worldwide global consulting company. We really focus on our client's success as opposed to our own success. And I think what makes us a little unique is it's an experience-based model where our consultants have 15-plus years of experience that they can bring to bear, marrying their functional expertise with industry expertise to really bring a unique solution to our clients.
Now, there's lots of different consulting firms. Is there anything else that differentiates you from the other consulting firms?
There is, I think, and there's two aspects, really. One is our ownership structure. We're employee-owned, 100% owned by every employee in the company, and I think that is very unique in the consulting arena. And the second is we go to market marrying global expertise, but really with a local model where our consultants live and work in the communities that they actually live in.
Now, when a consultant is getting started in their consultancy, a lot of times they work for these firms where they're being sent and deployed all over the world, right? And they are gone, you know, during the week and then come home on the weekends. Isn't that one of the kind of the learning curve that they all have to go through?
That is. And most of our people have probably had a stint of that in their career. And that is a typical model in consultancy. You live somewhere, but you go to where the work is. We kind of turn that upside down and realize that if you hire smart folks and you focus on a local model, you can. It's amazing how much work you can actually get done in the market that you're in.
In their own backyard, right?
Their own backyard. And then that way people can really extend their consulting careers because that traveling
wears on you. I'm sure it impacts family life. There's probably the quality of life is probably worse off if you're traveling all over the place and you're trying to raise kids and stuff.
Certainly. And that's often the time when they become, those consultants become very good prospects for us.
Then they become more open to that. Hey, I kind of like the idea of turning in my frequent flyer card, right?
Yeah, you quickly realize a bunch of frequent flyer points isn't worth it.
So now, but can you talk a little bit more about this employee-owned culture? I'm a big fan of employee-owned companies. I find they're the ones that are going to go the extra mile. You know, that sense of ownership, it goes beyond the monetary compensation. It's like the emotional connection of being part of something bigger than yourself, I think, is super important. Can you talk about how that evolved and how you were able to implement that?
Sure. Yeah. At North Highland, the ownership culture is really everything. It is the cultural glue that holds us together. It makes us unique and different from our prior lives. It began, we're actually an ESOP, which is a U.S.-based retirement plan that we've been able to leverage globally through some other mechanisms. But every single person, the typical consulting model would be often it's a partner model or in more recently, they're public models, where in our case, we're every single person is an owner. And I really have...
And when you say every single person, it's not just the consultants, right?
From receptionist to CEO, consultants to accountants, every person participates.
So now, can you talk about why, like in the partner model, how does that play off and what's kind of the pros and cons of that versus your model?
Sure. Professional service businesses tend to evolve around a partner model. And But in that case, it tends to be, and I'll speak in broad generalization, but typically it can be almost a millstone type of environment. You have to work and work and work, and if you do all of these things right and the planets align, you make partner and you get the brass ring or the gold ring at that point, as opposed to really being involved from the very get-go, helping the company grow and being rewarded from the first day, not just a select group of people that have worked hard, but everyone can participate in it. And that's very different.
And it seems like in the employee-owned model, the leadership or the founders have to really have this longer-term view of success and not it's only about me kind of mentality.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's really helped us through the recession, most recent recession. And we take a very long-term perspective. We're the owners. We're only accountable to ourselves and, of course, to our clients. We're not accountable to Wall Street or, and in our case, even to the banks, because we're well financed. So we can really look out over the horizon and say what's best for our clients and what's best for our people, and be able to solve for that in the long term. And that's a very distinct advantage.
Now, have you worked with clients that see your setup this way and want to set themselves up this way?
We have not so much our clients. Most of our clients tend to be the global 500 or 1,000. So our clients tend to be very large multinationals. Mm-hmm. We have helped advise other consultancies or professional service companies. I'm active in the ESOP Association and anxious to share our learnings with other companies.
So now, can you talk a little bit about that? The ESOP, it's a whole group of people that support this methodology?
Yeah, ESOP is, in some ways, it's kind of a little esoteric. It is actually a ERISA-based government retirement plan. So it has a lot of regulations around it. But in its broadest concept, it is a means for usually a founder of a business to be able to sell a portion or all of that business to the employees. Mm-hmm. The original person would get certain tax benefits, and then the company, and in turn the employees, would get certain tax benefits under an ESOP. And we've been able to leverage that both here in the U.S., where it is regulated by the IRS and Department of Labor, but we've added other plans so that our employees in the U.K. and in China can also participate just as a U.S. employee would.
Now, do you think that more professional services should at least consider this?
That's a great question, and I would say yes with a big caveat. It works only if the management team and the owners are committed to employee ownership, and that's a big decision. You can't be halfway committed to employee ownership. It requires extraordinary transparency with your owners, who are also your employees. That can be difficult from time to time, but you really have to be committed to sharing all of the rewards and the positive side is the troubles and the issues. You got to be very open. If you're not, I would not recommend an ESOP. But if that fits your culture, I think people really ought to look at it. There's some really distinct advantages.
Can you share some of the landmines? Not all systems, but a lot of systems work great when, everything's growing and everything's wonderful. But when there's a downturn or there's some problems, all those systems, they may be well-meaning, but the employees, there's some security and safety elements that employees like that, when we're all owners, sometimes we lose, right?
That's exactly right.
probably not a fun conversation.
No, it's not. But you can't shield your employee owners from that. They need to be fully aware of what it means to be an owner so that you actually drive that kind of behavior as well, in addition to being an employee. Yeah, there are certain limitations, I would say, or things you would consider with an ESOP. At the end of the day, the company is the only provider of the cash that will pay out the owners. There is no public market. There is no angel fund. There's no one else that's going to come in and make that possible other than the company itself. Mm-hmm. So you really have to be able to look long-term, build a war chest of liquidity so that when those days come, everyone is confident that they will get paid out. If they don't have that confidence, then they may or may not behave as an owner, and then you're only getting half of the benefit of that model. So that would be first and foremost, I think, is do you have the discipline and do you have a business model that would allow for that?
Mm-hmm. Now, can you share any stories maybe amongst the people in your company that you were able to deal with the difficult time and that there was an advantage of having this type of model?
Sure. It happens all the time. I got to admit, I'm probably the luckiest CFO out there because I really do see our employees conflicted, and that's in a good way. You see them in everyday discussions behave as an employee. I'm an employee just like they are.
Right.
You know, I want more compensation. I want more of this and that. That's perfectly fine. And then at the same time, seeing that there's a flip side to that, that if we increase compensation or pick any expense, then we'll make less money and the company will be worth less. So they really are torn in a positive way to make that decision. And that's very powerful. When you have 1,000 employees that really think like owners as well as employees, they make much better decisions. And that really does work very well. I mean, 2008 with the big global recession, it was a difficult time for us as it was for our clients, but we communicated what we were going to do, how we were going to handle it, and our employees really did rise to the occasion and say, that's a plan, that's something we can execute, and we'll get through this. So,
now, as an owner, do they get a voice? Like, how do they get to express themselves?
No, it's all Kirk.
No, I mean, like, it's one thing to say, look, we're all owners here, but... It's time to make a decision. You sit over there and I'll take care of this.
No, absolutely. They have a voice. And sometimes, that can be quite painful.
Well, that's part of the cost of doing business in this way, right?
Absolutely. Keeps us on our toes. And it's actually exciting. We have lots of town halls. We have lots of company meetings at the office level and whatnot as we're communicating the results of the company, the direction of the company. And it is not uncommon to have any employee stand up and challenge me or challenge any of the other executives on an aspect of the business.
How do you manage that so that you don't have a group of employees saying, look, like take some like an issue. It could be as simple as like we have bottled water here, and some people are like, look, bottled water is wasteful. We don't want to have bottled water. We want to have this kind of water coming in that's not using these plastic bottles. Like, do they have a chance to, like you say, you have regular town halls. You must have to build that into your, that has to be there on purpose, right? That didn't accidentally happen.
No, absolutely. And it's actually the culture of the company. Mm-hmm. Everyone's accountable to each other. And what you really see is it's almost self-correcting. If someone goes out of line or starts to behave outside of the norm or the culture, that employee-owner culture, it really does self-correct. Their fellow peers and colleagues tend to push them back into the culture that we're building and growing. It's very organic, and that's the beauty of it. Again, as a traditional CFO, we're not rule-based. I mean, our CEO often says we have guidelines, not rules. As an owner, if you're free, if there's something else we need to do, do it. Don't do it in isolation. Let us know. But that cultural element really does unleash, I think, the potential of those employees. And consistently, they make better decisions when they're left on their own than being told what to do.
Now, how do you hire for this right fit in the culture?
That's a big deal. We're always looking for smart and experienced consultants.
But they can't just be smart. They got to, they could be the smartest people in the world, but if they can't fit in this culture or they're, they don't behave right, that's not going to be the right fit, right?
Absolutely. And I think it's probably the cultural fit is probably the most intensive part of it because there are lots of very smart and capable people out there and they will thrive in consulting, but they may not thrive in our environment. So I think the average person that we interview probably has interviewed this is almost embarrassing to say sometimes, 10, 11, 12, 13 people that they've talked to or chatted
with. So 13 people within the organization?
Yeah, there's very few, yes. And most of our actual hires are referral based. We average anywhere from 50 to 75% of our hires every year are through our own internal network, and that ensures a lot.
So one of your consultants knows somebody or had met them in a previous life and said, oh, Bill would be a great guy.
This is someone I liked working with. Right. They will fit in.
So you've already kind of vetted them through this person. And so when they come in, at least you're pretty close culturally. That's just might have to
That really does limit the number of outliers that you right. have.
So now, when this first started, was it always this employee-owned, like from the very beginning? Or was there a time where you were more conventional and then you moved to this?
Kirk had to fix it.
No, certainly. I inherited a great platform.
Do CFOs, would they be buy into this? Would they be the ones that push this a lot of times? It seems like you've got to be pretty forward-thinking.
You do. I think it takes, as I said earlier, it really takes the entire management team. We didn't start out this way. We started out with a founder.
Like probably conventional way,
sure.
right?
I mean, no one starts out. The cost of doing an ESOP, you need to be of a certain size. You don't have to be real large, but you wouldn't start out this way. But it was entirely consistent with our founder and the team of employee ownership. Everyone was engaged early on into the business. It was actually, in large part, a reaction to what at the time was the partner model. So they wanted to do it differently.
Because you guys are contrarians. You're like, the consultants travel, we don't travel. Consultants are partners, we're not partners. Right? That's your culture, right?
Anytime we look like our competition, we step back and say,
let's flip this and let's see if we can do this differently.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right? So what was it? Were you around when they had that conversation and made the switch?
No, the company was founded in 92 and I joined in 2001. Mm-hmm. So we started the ESOP in 1997. So the ESOP was a partial ESOP at the time. It wasn't 100% at that point, but it's grown from there to where now the ESOP actually owns 100% of the business. But it wasn't that big of a transition. The way that we approached each other, the way the company was organized was always consistent with an employee, a broad employee ownership team. Rather than the traditional partner.
Right, so mentally they were already there. They're just like, hey, let's just formalize this and really,
take advantage of the certain tax
and benefits
benefits of that structure.
Because we're emotionally there already,
right? And I think that's really important. ESOPs are great, but they do have certain restrictions, and they're regulatory, so there's nothing you can do about them. So you need to make sure it does fit with your long-term objectives, because some elements of it are extremely inflexible. So you have to take the whole package with it.
And then you've been able to navigate, since you are a global company, you've been able to navigate the hurdle of a U.S.-based ESOP system in the other countries that you work in.
Right. We try to create sister plans that work based on each country.
It mimics it or it follows most of the guidelines?
Exactly, the best you can. Everyone, at the end, what we're solving for is every single person in every single city feels like they're tied to the overall growth and value of the business.
Now, are there any statistics on employee-owned companies performing better than non-employee-owned companies?
There are, and the National Center of Employee Ownership publishes those regularly. Consistently and historically, employee-owned companies, either through stock ownership plans or ESOPs, tend to outperform their peers and the industry as a whole.
Do they know the why of that?
Yeah, it's actually rooted in employee engagement. Mm-hmm. The more engaged the employee are, there's more to an employee being happy at work than just showing up to work. Engaged means they truly care about all aspects of the business, be it the client. In our case, it's the client delivering great work and the business of which they're an employee and an owner. And engagement is higher when in employee-owned companies because they have a reason to be engaged in addition to just being a true professional.
So how does the sales and marketing work? Are the consultants out writing the business, or is there a centralized sales and marketing effort or regional, or how does that piece work?
Yeah, we're very decentralized. Like I said earlier, we go to market locally, so each local market is the focus of our sales channel, so to speak. And so each team of consultants, we're aligned by the clients and our industry groups. They bring forth the marketing and the sales pursuits customized to that local market and to that client, because most of our clients are global in nature.
Right.
But there's a unique mix of understanding exactly what it is they need locally and how they behave perhaps at their corporate headquarters, and then being able to serve them anywhere in the world they need work done.
So you know why I ask, because my wife, who's with a traditional consulting firm, the watchword at my house is utilization, right?
Unfortunately, in consulting, you can't get away from that. So as good consultants, you can come up with thousands of ways to calculate it.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's one of the core economics, to the extent a consultant is being billable at a client is the basic unit of economics for a consultancy. So.
But what a blessing it must be to open that conversation with, I'm with North Highland. I mean, that means something these days, doesn't it?
Well, thanks. I think so, and I think our employees think so. We have a very complicated compensation structure that's aligned around an ownership compensation. People can choose how to make money within their career. High utilization, sales support. There are lots of ways to enhance your compensation, which is more traditional of how an owner might do it as opposed to an employee on a very strict, rigid plan. And that, I think, gives people the flexibility. And we want employees and owners that are going to be there for a long time. And people have different objectives throughout their life. And it's really interesting how they can marry these various objectives through the compensation plan and ownership plan and flex that as they continue their professional journey.
Now, how does this model impact your future growth plans?
Well, it's critical to it. I mean, we are a high growth company and we need to remain a high growth company. We have lots of opportunity ahead of us. We have many more markets to penetrate and clients to serve. And through growth is how professionally we're able to offer advancement for our people, mm-hmm. and how we can invest in additional services for our clients. So it's yet another reason to have an employee fully understand why we need to grow, why we need to go that extra mile continuously. And it's another unique aspect of the local model. It really brings the focus home. No one's going to save your day by selling work in a market, way outside of your domain. You need to stay focused, provide excellent service to your clients and value to your clients locally. And that's a little edge, I think, that has helped us through the years.
Now, what are your future growth plans? Where are you looking to expand to? Is it, like you said, different markets around the world? Is it different niches and industries?
It's really all of those. As the industry has changed and continues to mature, we still have local markets here in the U.S., 10 or half dozen more cities that we want to launch into, as well as continue to grow in the markets that we're in. And globally, we have offices in China and in the U.K., and we have a network of providers that we provide globally. So we'll grow both globally through our network and through our sister companies, as well as to continue to grow the U.S. market.
So where can our listeners go to learn more? Website, that kind of thing?
Sure, we'd be glad to. NorthHighland.com is the place to start. We have two other sister companies, or actually three, of a Sparks Grove, which is a digital marketing company, and a full-service agency. We have a BI division called Infathom, infathom.com, and a staffing company called TrueBridge Resources. So all of those are sister companies. All participate in the ESOP. All are employee-owned as part of the North Highland family.
But they're individual entities?
They are for various reasons. But, yes, they're different entities, be it divisions or legal entities for financial reasons. But, again, one of the complexities and one of the things that we've been able to do is every single one of those participants all share in the ESOP and the
right. So that model transferred to each one of them.
Absolutely. Even though they're different, they're, you know, they may sound similar, but they are different right. service lines. But we're able to combine everyone and keep everyone focused.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this morning. We got to have you back, man. You'd come back with a sister company or maybe a delighted client or maybe a couple of folks that are, you know, employee owners of the system. I mean, I could see us doing a dedicated segment on that.
Just on
ESOP, right?
Is the ESOP group here in town? Do you have that group here in town, or that's a national organization?
The NCEO is a national organization. Uh-huh. But, yeah, we'd be glad. I mean, the best advocates for our model are our employees. We'd love to have
that'd be great. Let's meet up in the Caribbean.
There you go.
We'll bring the remote broadcast kit. I got this thing all mapped out.
I like it.
Well, thanks again for joining us. How about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Yes, sir. Next up on Results Matter Radio this morning, we have with us the Grand Poobah of Silver Pop, I think, Mr. Bill Nussey. How you doing, man?
Good morning. Thanks for having me today.
Well, yeah, it's been fun watching you because you were nodding your head a lot during that interview. I thought I caught you taking a few notes. What'd you learn from that segment?
Silver Pop's a high-growth tech company, so culture is central to our success. And so a lot of the things that you were talking about, Kirk, were really rung true. And if you can create an environment that's beyond the rules – that gives people an opportunity to flex their own style, to find what they're passionate about, you have a dramatically higher level of creativity and impact in the business. So I love the fact that you guys have been able to do that. I've worked in consulting, and I love sure. the fact that you guys have been able to achieve that. It's really something to be proud of.
Thanks.
So are you guys up for that employee-owned? You ready to take that plunge?
Well, all of our employees own stock, or stock
so you're,
options.
Oh, nice. So you're very open to that.
Yes, it's very typical of high-growth tech companies, too. But it's not exactly the same thing that he's right. talking about, but it has a lot of the same effect.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Silver Pop. What are you guys doing for folks?
So Silver Pop's a software company headquartered here in Georgia. We've got about 500 people around the world. We do one thing we're really excited about, which is we help businesses create absolutely amazing individualized customer experiences. No matter where the customers touch that business, digitally, even offline, although we're primarily an online kind of digital marketing company. And so that software lets these marketers create transformative experiences that get their customers more engaged. And if everything works according to plan, they spend more money, and they spend more money for a longer period of time.
Is it primarily for e-retailers?
Retail is one of our biggest segments, but we serve a whole wide set of segments, including the B2B segments, travel and tourism, a lot of companies in the automobile industry.
Mm-hmm. So, but there is a transaction. That's what you guys help facilitate?
Actually, I think one of the cool things about our company is that in addition to helping drive the revenue element of that relationship, which obviously all businesses need to focus on, mm-hmm. We have a deep belief that the broader relationship with that customer is going to create all kinds of secondary benefits. So, for example, if you look at a company like Amazon or Apple, one of the best examples ever. So is Apple's iPhone, it's a great product, right?
Right.
Is it so much better than every other phone ever invented? Maybe. But it's the entire Apple experience. It's iTunes and Apple stores. And what Apple's done is taken customer experience to the highest level, maybe ever. And what happens isn't just that I buy an iPhone, right? What I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you about how great that experience is.
Right.
And when that happens, the greatest magic, the most powerful marketing ever occurs. All the TV ads a company can run, all the door-to-door salespeople they can hire can't touch a recommendation, a heartfelt, excited recommendation from somebody. So when you create that customer experience, you lift the entire relationship to a new level. That's what we try to do with our customers.
Now, I find that there are certain things that's absolutely true. Like if you find a new restaurant, right, and you find this hole in the wall, this
right.
divey place,
mm-hmm.
you can't wait to tell 50 people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's like you're proud of it and you're excited to share that. But some things people just don't refer.
Well, there's a lot more than just referrals. You know, a great example, I love to tell the story. I was flipping TV channels late at night one night, and I came across what I now know to be called a spaghetti western with Clint Eastwood.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what it was, and I thought, wow, this is the coolest human being I've ever seen. I did some research on it. I always liked Clint Eastwood.
Right.
And so I went to Amazon and bought a Clint Eastwood movie,
right.
the one I was watching, so I could see all of it later. Well, a couple weeks later, Amazon sent me some other opportunities for spaghetti westerns.
Right.
And I hadn't given a single thought to buying a second one. Right. I have bought every single Western movie Clint Eastwood has made.
Right.
And I love Amazon for it. And that's a simple example because they're just recommending products.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference that Amazon's embodying is that they're, most marketers have this cycle they've been running for 50 years. You know, if you go back to the beginning of television when marketing was really invented, and you had this thing was called an audience.
Right.
And people watched a television show, and you'd have this Tide had this pretty lady singing a song, and magic occurred, and people bought Tide in droves, right?
Right.
So you take that forward 50, 60 years today, and most marketers are still doing the same thing. Define an audience, create some content for it, and blast it out. Mass media. They do that with email. They do it with social media.
Right.
And what changes is when that experience becomes individual, when you actually talk to a person. So as a marketer, instead of saying, here's what I want to say today to my audience, I create a roadmap where any customer can come in at any time, interact in any way, at any speed, and they have a completely individualized experience. When that happens, you have that magic that Apple and Amazon and other people create.
And that's what Silverpop does? You're able to tailor an individual experience?
Absolutely. And you got to do a couple things to make that work, and all of them are hard. and so we try to make it easy, right?
That's your value proposition. Right. If it's hard.
So imagine the first thing is that traditional marketers think about their customers as sort of a row of data. So I know your first name, I know your last name, I know your where you live.
Right.
And that's the beginning end of most marketing. We have an approach that we can take all the things with the permission of the customer. That's really important to us. We absolutely want to make sure that our customers are aware that they're in this relationship, but we're going to know what you do on the web, what the customers do on the website, what they're doing on social media, if they call a support center or they talk to a salesperson, depending on the business, we're going to know about all that. We have a database that allows customers to store, our marketers to store more information more broadly of any kind, mm-hmm. not just rows and columns like traditional systems. That's part of what we do. The other half of it, which is just as interesting, is that we have an engine that can look at those things, look at activities as they happen in real time. Maybe you liked something on Facebook. Maybe you walked into a franchise operation at a store. And any one of those activities can come into our product live and create a unique experience right there for that customer at that very moment. It could be just as simple as you go to a website and it says, that printer you bought 3 months ago, you're probably out of ink right now. It's right there innocuously in the bottom.
Right.
It could be as profound as you walk into a store, your mobile phone app, with your permission, tells the store that you've entered. The clerk knows that when you walk up and they say, hey, Bill, it's nice to see you again. I noticed this is the third time you've come back, or the first time you've come to this store. So welcome, wanted to tell you what's unique about us.
Mm-hmm.
And if this happens naturally, consumers
love it. That's
the key,
this organic,
right.
like almost serendipity.
If marketers mm-hmm. don't use it well, it could be creepy.
Elegance is important, right? It's that creepy and elegant. It's a fine line.
But that's marketing, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the beauty. Marketing is an art. It's an art of storytelling.
Right.
And if you can tell a story just for you, the story is a whole lot better.
Right. And it could be subtle things. Like if you know that I looked at a red jacket or something,
mm-hmm.
and then the next time I go, there's a red jacket on the page.
Right.
Like I'm thinking, oh, that's great. I like red jackets. There's a red jacket. Right. And you've done this in kind of a subtle way. It wasn't blatant. And then I'm like, oh, it makes me impulsively maybe consider that more than I would if it was just a randomly colored jacket.
Absolutely. And for you as a customer, you're going to want to do business with that company again because either magically or explicitly, they've helped you get what you wanted more quickly.
Right.
You know, the way I like to frame it is that there's this customer revolution taking place, and it's the notion of a customer used to be, I'm going to buy something, and the company says, great, that's revenue for me, and that's the end of it. And maybe if you like the thing you buy, you'll come back. But
right.
That's all being displaced with customers are looking for and expect and can get so much more now. They can get fulfillment. They can get convenience. They can get ease. So if I'm going to buy something, if I can buy it more easily from you, Amazon's a great example. It's just super easy to buy things from Amazon.
Right.
It's not, maybe even price isn't as important. That ease actually is a buying reason. The experience of going to an Apple store. I love going to an Apple store, right? So those experiences create the customer's expectations get higher and higher. So if your form of marketing is to simply blast out.
And interrupting and just, you know, hard selling.
And that's going to get less and less successful over the next decade. And ideally, companies like Silverpop are going to enable marketers to offer that Amazon.com-like experience, but to all the rest of the marketing world that doesn't have billions of dollars of R&D to create the system
right.
from scratch, right?
Right.
And so the cool thing about being at Silverpop is that in addition to having a great, thriving tech business, there's this notion that we can actually make the world of marketing a little bit better, and that's exciting.
And so what are the companies that you worked with and what are the, I mean, you don't have to name them if you don't want to, but like, can you share an example of how this happened in real life?
Absolutely. We have 5,000 clients across the world, or 5,000 brands.
Okay, just start listing them in alphabet.
Yeah, so I can give you a couple names. Marketers are, marketers know marketing, so when they let you use their name, they
right.
they want something
okay,
for it.
Right.
So we have customers in the automobile business like Honda and Mazda. We also serve customers that are in the B2B business like Pitney Bowes and Texas Instruments, but also some really cool techie companies like YouSendIt and Mint.com. Mm-hmm. So we have, and of course, some companies here in town like
Georgia
Tech.
So you were part of the YouSendIt Hightail transition?
We were the tool that they've had from the beginning to help them grow. So in a small way, our tools
helped them.
Because
I want to know why they changed the name.
Couldn't tell you that. But that's
I
a cool
company. I thought YouSendIt was a pretty good name. YouSendIt was pretty...
You know, they didn't ask my opinion.
We use all the time. It's one of our main tools.
Isn't it a great tool? And if that means you've seen the marketing you get from them and the customer relationship stuff is usually going to be
it's
on
been
our
fantastic.
Platform.
It's on
our
platform. That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
I just like the marketing part.
Perfect. Thank you. Well said. You're a great advocate. So we have these customers all over the world. So you can think of our customers across industries like retail and B2B. So we have elements of our solution that let companies that have sales teams help those sales teams really add value to that relationship in addition to closing a deal and closing new deals. If we have a lot of e-commerce companies, so in addition to doing a shopping cart abandon or a product recommendation, we have the entire ability to know that customer through the life cycle. So not only will they buy today, but they'll buy more in the future. And if you do the job really well, they'll brag about you to their friends. And that's part of what we try to accomplish with the customers. Now, a lot of customers are just at the beginning of this journey, right?
Right.
So they're going to take years to get better, and
you have to manage that expectation, right?
Right,
because that's probably one of the challenges. You want to they think, oh, I'm going to hire Silverpop, and boom, right. Just the faucet of clients will just start pouring out, right?
That's a great point, and I have some salespeople that try to convince customers of that. But it is the cool thing is that I think we can get customers closer, faster, more easily to that promise. But ultimately, it's a journey, and like Kirk said, if you really want to be this kind of marketing organization, you have to embrace it at all levels in your business. You have to say
you have to go all in.
Yeah,
right?
You have to say to your marketing team, you know what? I'm going to allow you to influence what we do in customer support. I'm going to allow you to influence what we do at sales. I'm going to allow you to influence what we do at the stores. And when marketing has that reign, and they have tools like ours and the vision to do it, they can completely redefine their industries and become winners.
And what's the pain the company's having where that you're the solution?
Well, this is the funny thing about being a marketer. So, 10 years ago, you were busting to get a website out, and then email came around, and you're trying to do email programs. And so you might have had 10 people on your marketing staff at, say, half a billion dollar company. Well, in the last 10 years, there's been an explosion. There's mobile, and there's social, and Facebook, and Twitter, and Pinterest. And
a new one popped up every 3 months.
That's the really crazy thing about marketing is it's probably the most dynamic part of a business that's ever existed. And yet, if you go back to that same marketing team 10 years later, when it was just a website and now it's all these things, they still have 10 people.
Right. It's the same 10 people.
Same 10 people. Well, sometimes they change, but they have an inordinate amount of work to do, and it's getting more diverse. It's almost exploding in complexity and diversity. Mm-hmm. And so tools are the only way they can survive it if they don't have tools. But even then, that amount of diversity they're having to manage because customers—
But they can't be good at all of them.
They can't. And so, again, tools help them, like ours, help them get good enough at a lot of them and let them focus on the ones they really want to do. But what you really want as a marketer isn't to worry about the channels. You don't want to worry as much about Pinterest or Facebook or email or the website. You want to worry about the story you're telling.
Right, this overarching strategy and and mission and things like that.
Then that's
right?
What our industry is and our company is on a mission to do. Tell the story, and then we'll work with you both in an automatic way or automagic way, I like to call it. Mm-hmm. And that story tells itself across the channels. And at the coolest part is we allow you to tell that story individually in a very personalized and individualized way for each one of your independent customers.
So you're working primarily with the large company directly or through agencies?
So we work with all size companies. We're very much agnostic. We work with companies around the globe, across a lot of industries. We're large enough to have that kind of a footprint. So we do work with a lot of agencies, and agencies have an amazing value add into that equation because they're ultimately storytellers,
right?
Visually and copywriting, and so they're partners with our customers to get these stories out individually.
So it doesn't matter. You'll work with either one.
Yes, some of our customers work side by side with agencies. Some of them work only with the agency, and some only work with us. We're pretty flexible.
Now, can you talk a little bit about this DMU event?
So if you've got this
Digital Marketing University.
So
for
you've
those
got this,
not in the know.
There's people that haven't heard of DMU.
You know, I thought it was common knowledge.
I'm just excited you knew you sent it.
Yeah.
So there's this vision I've talked about that most marketers, they know how cool it is to be Amazon and Apple, but they have no idea how to get there.
No, they can't even imagine that they could get there.
Right. I don't have $1 billion of R&D, right. So I can't possibly be like that. So what we've done is we've assembled a group of visionaries, some great vendors, including ourselves, and a decidedly non-sales pitch kind of venue. We do this all over the world, and we get together a group of the smartest marketers in a region, and we spend a half day or longer with that group, and we talk about what's possible, and we have case studies. And I think the highest value is the marketers talk and meet with each other. And for vendors like us, and we sponsor and have built this thing, we rent the facility, and you'll probably get a pen that says Silver Pop on it. Maybe the opening welcome will be someone from Silver Pop. But ultimately, if marketers can embrace this vision, and we were part of that, and even in a small way, that helps grow Silver Pop and the industry. And we're doing this all over the world, and it's hugely successful.
So now what happens at the when you go there for that half day? What do you guys
So you're gonna see case studies from some of the best examples that are related to the business you're in.
This is all digital. You're immersed in digital marketing for half a day until your brain explodes.
Not just digital marketing, because there's a lot of that. In fact, your brain's already exploding if you're doing digital marketing. But how do you think about digital marketing in a way that you can create this individualized customer experience? Not just how do I improve
just
my
bludgeon
response
them
rates?
With email spam, right?
That's not working very well. That's not working very well.
For the Nigerian princes. They're the only ones.
It doesn't work well for them either. It doesn't work. But they don't need to make much money. So their expectations are particularly low. But no, that's exactly what we're trying to do with the DMUs, which is to get marketers to see that there's more than just bludgeoning customers. And if the only dialogue, and sometimes the only dialogue with marketers is how do I increase the subject? How do I increase the response rate to a subject line? Or how do I get more clicks on my website?
Is red better than blue?
Those are important questions, but they're not strategic.
Right.
And what the DMUs are doing is raising that strategic dialogue so that marketers can frame the decisions they make towards, a more compelling future to customers.
So now, are you bullish? And is business changing, or are we still going to be just bombarded with this interruption-type marketing?
Well, interruption marketing's never going to go away, but it'll become a smaller portion of the pie. And so, because sometimes we don't know, we're thinking that we don't know that a red sweater is interesting. We never thought about it, and there's one that someone's figured out, or just serendipitously, that's a great sweater I want. So there's always some of that, but what I am absolutely beyond bullish that it's already happening, and our role is just to help customers and marketers get there quicker.
I was watching football over the weekend, and I noticed that's the only thing I watch live. Sports is the only thing I watch live. Everything else I fast forward through. I DVR, and then I watch it when I want to watch it on my own terms. And because of that, I mean, that has to impact how commercials are priced, how people choose that path. I mean, are you seeing that?
There is a definitive shift in TV viewing, and people are watching less and less live television and taking the option to skip commercials, although there's still relatively healthy industry television, despite all those changes, because still a lot of people watch it, and people watch it traditionally. But what's being, Netflix and others are kind of usurping that, but they find new revenue models. So ultimately, I think the long-form video viewing experience, whether it's sports or TV shows or movies, is permanent, and they're just going to find new and different ways to monetize it. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it will be paid for by advertising.
And so advertising and sponsorship and underwriting things, it's not going to go away.
Not at all.
It's just how it's being done is
not at
going
all.
To change, though.
And there's an old saying in marketing, you've probably heard it, that it costs five times as much money to get a new customer as to keep an existing customer.
Right.
And I think every marketer I've ever talked to agrees with that. I've never met a marketing department, including our own, that actually puts their budget there. and partially because the techniques and the tools to really build that relationship is much harder than it sounds. Mm-hmm. And it's just real easy to go to somebody and say, here's $1 million for a Super Bowl ad, period. And I'm done. And I'm going to get a certain response from that.
Right. And you're not going to get fired for making that decision.
Not at all.
Right.
And so because there's 50 years that it's worked.
Right.
And it's not going to quit working. But ultimately, you're going to see, and we've already started to see, a transition towards true relationship marketing. And the ROI gets higher, the customer engagement gets deeper, and the revenue tail gets longer. So it's just a lot of change, decades worth of patterns and habits and leadership that will shift in the coming decades.
Yeah, there's another old saying in advertising that 50% of my advertising doesn't work. I just don't know what 50%.
Yes, it's a famous one. In the world of digital, you do know. That's one of the big changes. It is. You can now know what 50% is working and focus on that, which is great. And that's just the beginning.
Right. Well, if somebody wanted to learn more, attend Digital Marketing University, because there's one coming up here. Or
yes, there's already... one actually here tomorrow in Atlanta.
Tomorrow.
It may be sold out, but we're having them all over the world, and we do them frequently. We'll come back
so
to the South.
So there'll be another one in Atlanta?
Absolutely.
And, okay, where do people go?
It's www.silverpop.com.
And they can find out about the DMU there?
If you come to that website, you will You'll not miss out about DMU.
And we'll then once sure I'm there, then you got me, right?
No, not at all. We have to get your permission before we're going to talk to you more than anything you want to do.
So what does Silverpop do to get my permission?
Asking you to sign up for email is the most natural way to get permission.
And is that a good tip for everybody?
If you are looking to build engaged relationships, email is one of the most powerful and high ROI ways to do it. But I would tell everyone who – and everyone does it, of course. Mm-hmm. Everyone has an email list. Think hard about the kind of relationship you're trying to build and make sure that you are creating – a relationship with those customers that they're going to value, not just one that is purely valuable and exclusively to you.
Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, you guys don't sell popsicles.
We do not, nor do we sell popcorn.
I got to do more pre-show research. I thought the guy was going to come in with free popsicles the whole bit. No, I'm kidding. Of course, you guys have a fabulous reputation in
Thank
the
you.
Marketplace. You're
Thank
doing,
you.
A, doing a wonderful job. Thanks so much for coming to visit with us, man.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you much.
You can join us in the Caribbean with Kirk if you want.
I'm there.
All right. Bring it home for us on Results Matter this morning. We have our old friend, no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone, from Next Atlanta, Miss Michelle Morgan. How you doing, sunshine?
Hello. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. You've been very patient. I thought I caught you taking a few notes, too. Yeah?
I did. I actually have tons of notes, and I probably have 1,000 questions for both of you, but we'll skip over that for now.
It's all about you now, Michelle.
That's right.
Tell us what's happening at Next Atlanta.
So just for everybody, Next used to be Hub Atlanta, and we were part of the Global Hub Network, and in the spring we did a rebrand, and it had to do partially with separating from the Hub Network and partially to redefine our own internal process. We have deepened our consulting and advisement piece, which is around helping people become socially responsible businesses. And we've taken a lot of my own background and embedded it into our internal methodology. So, just
your own architect background?
I would, yes, absolutely. So just for to sort of explain it in plain English, the only thing architects really do is create options for people. And then we help them decide what those options are. And so we use this process of asking questions and getting answers and, mm-hmm. and guiding with research and things like that. And so we've embedded a lot more of that in our day-to-day dealings with the entrepreneurs that we work with. And a lot more, you know, sort of have a conversation, design something, meaning build something or put something down on paper in some way that you can look at it. And then I would say critique. Some people might occasionally say interrogate. Mm-hmm. It depends on if we're using carrots or sticks that day. So, yeah. So we've been busy little bees. We have a new website at nextatlanta.com. All of our social media has changed over to Next Atlanta on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook. I can't even remember the list.
All
I should
the
get
usual
Mr. Silverpop.
To,
yes. We're spread a little thin on our, I feel like, on our social media. I was thinking of how overwhelming that can be for startups sometimes. So.
Now, you brought with you one of your program partners, though, right?
Yes.
Who do you got?
This is, in my estimation, and I'm so sorry for the feminine term of this, but this is the belle of the ball to me right now.
All
right.
I'll take that. I'll take whatever I can get.
This is Richard Sims, and he and his partner, Betsy Hauser, have come out of a program that I'm going to get the name wrong for, so I'm going to turn this over to Richard in a second. That's in Chicago, and they met there, and they formed this incredible program offering that I think is really needed in Atlanta. That's called Tech Talent South.
And out of Chicago, Tech Talent South.
No,
that's
so
pretty forward thinking.
I didn't draw a good line on that, did I?
Yeah. So our company is called Tech Talent South, and thrilled to be here with Michelle, and really appreciate all her support and kind words. And basically what we aspire to do is bring in beginners, and we kind of specialize in beginner-focused programs teaching web development and computer programming.
And what is the definition of beginner?
Really, know how to use a mouse and a keyboard, and
so any we'll it's not
in.
Age.
No, so we believe anyone of any age can learn to code. So it's not restrictive at all. We're looking for
even Bill.
Even Bill, yeah.
Wow.
So you know, we look for anyone, and we're you know constantly interviewing applicants, and we're looking for folks that are passionate and inquisitive and excited and have an idea that they want to pursue. So we don't focus on, you know, a lengthy resume or where you went to school or anything. Like, we look for the right types of people that are going to put a lot into it and get a lot out of it.
Mm-hmm. Are people hungry for this? Because I know there's
absolutely
a lot of job opportunity. If you know how to code, I think the unemployment rate is, like, negative.
Yeah, there are. And what's great about Atlanta is there's this huge narrative here of Atlanta wanting to, you know, build its way up to that next rung as a tech hub.
Yes, absolutely.
And, of course, a big part of that is talent, right? So we want to help to grow that talent here and keep it here. So really, yeah, our larger mission is just to grow tech talent here in the Southeast, particularly in Atlanta, and really to empower creative thinkers in the area to drive innovation. So we want to bring folks in that have ideas and kind of give them the skills to, you know, prototype those and pursue starting new businesses or making a transition into the tech world.
Now, for coders, are they coming in person to Next to learn? Is that the differentiator? Because, like, there's mm-hmm. Code Academy out
yeah.
there. Like, you can learn online.
Absolutely. And, you know, those online tutorials are fantastic.
Right.
What I would say candidly, though, is in my experience, a lot of times you hit a major wall with those
right.
as a beginner because
sure.
you know, what's really better than being in a classroom with a real instructor?
And raising your hand and getting help
exactly.
right there on the spot as opposed to, you know, mm-hmm. emailing someone.
And learning from your peers that are excited, too, and can
right.
look over your shoulder
and
help
work
you troubleshoot.
Together, collaborate.
You're also talking about people who are coming out of non-traditional backgrounds into coding. And
mm-hmm.
so you're talking about people who don't necessarily have an existing network of people who know how to code around them. So you have the opportunity to sit in a class and create a network very quickly in relationships
right.
with those people.
Right. And that's one reason we love Next so much is that a big part of our program, and I kind of always say it's not just, hey, come learn to program, be a programmer. It's much more about the bigger picture, right? So at Next, they're going to be surrounded by entrepreneurs that are starting companies that, you know, are working on their minimum viable product for their idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're bringing in local entrepreneurs to speak with them. We're arranging tours of, you know, local companies like Pardot or MailChimp. And, you know, I'd love to talk with you about Silverpop, too. But we're trying to engage them in the community as well. And, again, kind of inspire entrepreneurship in the area.
Now, is there a certain personality type? Like, how do you know if someone's going to be successful at that? Do you help
mm-hmm.
kind of help them help themselves in terms of vetting? Like, you know what? This is – you're going to have a hard time with this. Because,
yeah.
like, not everybody can do this, right?
Right. We do. So, like I mentioned, we do interview every applicant.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we're not harsh critics and we're not looking at their resume. It's more just gauging their enthusiasm. And, again, we really like to see them have a real idea that they want to work on. That makes a huge difference because, obviously, you get very excited and invested to...
Like a real idea, meaning they have an idea for an app or
exactly.
something like that.
So an idea for a web application. And it doesn't have to be, you know, $1 million idea or some big business. It's just something they're excited about
right.
that will make them, after class, excited to go incorporate the features that we've learned into that project they're working on.
How long does it take them to get competent enough to make an app?
Mm-hmm. So our program is 8 weeks long. So we have full-time and part-time classes available. And it's, you know, we describe it as immersive education. So like I'd mentioned earlier, beyond the time in the classroom, we'll have workshops, you know, events, speakers coming in. And there is the expectation that we set early in the interview process is, you know, we're expecting you to put in a lot of time outside of these classroom hours as well. So that's why we want to look for people that are really excited and understand what they're getting into. Because just like anything, it takes a lot of work. The more you put into it, the more you're going to get it out. But you know, we really believe anyone with the right attitude can learn to code and to build great products.
Now, you got something going in October?
Yes,
is that right?
So that's exactly right. So our session starts in mid-October, October 15th, runs through about mid-December.
And so this is the inaugural?
Right. So it's kind of a funny story. The way that Betsy, my co-founder, and I started, again, we did this immersive program in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And we started out by doing programs for kids. So we're big believers in kids getting earlier exposure to tech.
And kids at what age?
8 to about 14 or 15, actually.
Wow.
So we bring them in and, you know, teach them how to write little Ruby programs. We help them launch their first website. So we've done a number of camps kind of throughout the Southeast. And this will be our first program for adults. Our instructor, so Betsy and I actually teach the kids, but we brought in kind of a, you know, real deal, been around the block web developer to teach our adult classes. And he's been teaching internally within companies and on his own for years and years. So we're very excited to kick things off.
Are you still doing the camps for kids?
We are. We were in Asheville this weekend.
It's a weekend thing?
Well, over the summer it wasn't, but now it is, right, because they're in school. So it's a lot of fun. I mean, we bring in the kids, and it's really amazing what they can do. We had a young girl this weekend in Asheville that, you know, obviously had never programmed, and by the end of the day, she was building like a trivia program. So it was kind of like...
So she had this idea.
Yeah.
And so, then you helped her actually make it so it was functional?
Exactly. And so, you know, the computer would ask you a question. If you got it right, it would point you down this path. If you got it wrong, it would point you down this path. It was amazing. You know, it's almost scary how quickly they pick it up. So the adult programmers better watch out, you know?
Maybe have her come back to teach the adults.
Exactly.
So now, what can an adult, they go through the program, they get interviewed, then they participate at 8 weeks. Are they ready to be hired by somebody? Or are they, like, what level of skill
certainly
do they have
some would
eight
be.
Weeks?
And people come in with different interests. So I would say people fall into one of three categories. Some people do really want to pursue programming as a career, right? And those folks certainly have had the chance to build their portfolio, to get connected with companies here in Atlanta. And we've definitely been approached by a number of companies that are very interested in talking to programmers coming out of our class. Now, of course, they still have a lot to learn, but they have a tremendous foundation. So it's a great, great way to make that transition. We have a lot of people come in that are more aspiring entrepreneurs. So they might not want to be the guy that builds the whole product in the end, but they want to be able to come in and prototype their ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why I learned to program initially, is because if you have an idea and you approach like a web development shop, for example, you're going to be, you know, pretty far in financially before you really know if you've got an idea that holds any water. Mm-hmm. So what's great about what we teach with Rails, which is an application framework that's very quick to pick up and build, like you can build out a minimum viable product over a weekend, for example, figure out if it's good. If it's not, scratch it, move on. You know, you may have spent your Saturday, but you didn't spend $15,000.
Right.
And then we also get folks who just are in the tech world on the business side, and they may be managing a tech team, or, you know, they just want to be able to talk the talk or more effectively understand timelines for features being built and stuff like that.
So now this 8-week program, how much does this cost?
So our full time is about $6,000. Part time is about $4,000.
And in 8 weeks, they're immersed. They get this all these connections, right, with Next, and then they get access to your teachers and.
Exactly. So, like we mentioned, a lot of events, a lot of great resources from Next, which is fantastic, and we're super excited about the partnership. Of course, you know, continued access to our materials, and part of what we're trying to do too is build a community. So when people are finished with the program, you know, we don't want them to fall off the radar. You know, we want them to continue to be engaged in our events and coming back to us with questions. And, you know, a lot of people coming out of a program like this may partner up to start a company or to start a web development shop.
Now, are you going to be doing the camps again for the kids in the summer?
We are, and throughout the year as well. So we're shooting to do one up in Athens, probably in a couple months, one in Greensboro. So
are you looking for schools to partner with? How do you do those?
Potentially. We host them out of co-working spaces, so other spots like Next, you know, throughout the Southeast, and they kind of help promote it and get folks interested. And there's a lot of interest from education. Right now, we don't have, like, any official partnerships with any institutions, but there's obviously some overlap there, so we're always kind of brainstorming on that side.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, is there a website for you guys? Mm-hmm.
It's just www.techtalentsouth.com.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. Now, Michelle, do you have any other programs that you got going on that you want to share?
We have, we took August off from Burning Plan. I think you guys have heard about Burning Plan before. It's our open coat business plan review. And so on the 17th, which is next Tuesday, we'll be back with a company called Keo. They are fair trade for freelancers. And then we have a nice lineup going into the fall. We've actually got a couple of incubator accelerator programs that want to come to Burning Plan and present their proposition and how they become sustainable long term. So it should be pretty exciting.
Now, who is the perfect profile of a person that should come into Next and check you guys out?
So our new sign with our new name has our customer profile on it. It says Community of Nerds. So if you are a person who likes to mentally tinker with things, we're kind of your connecting point. And our membership varies from people who are independent consultants, like you'd have from North Highland, but might have an opportunity to work outside of their office, and they don't necessarily want to work at home.
Sure.
We have a lot of startup entrepreneurs. We get a lot of serial entrepreneurs that have finished a project and are now kind of thinking through what the next project is. And
right. They like the energy, right?
They do, and they like to see the ideas that other people are bubbling up. And to be honest, our entrepreneurial community right now is super excited about Tech Talent South because
I'll bet.
They want to sit. They asked me the other day if I could construct a set of bleachers that would be on the side. on the side of the program area, so that and the kind of glass you have in an interrogation booth, so that they could watch the guys in the code program. So we have a lot of that, and we have people who have areas of specialty that they've developed inside companies, and they're looking to make that entrepreneurial leap. I like to call them enterprise curious. Mm-hmm. So right now, for some reason, we have a couple, maybe five people that have a deep logistics background. That would make great operations people, and they're swimming around in our place looking for their next project.
Good stuff. Now, if somebody wants to learn more, your website?
Nexatlanta.com.
And that's nexatlanta.com.
Yes.
Good stuff. Well, thank you, and thanks to all our guests for being here at Results Matter today. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week.
This has been a joint production of Burr and Foreman and Business Radio X. Burr and Foreman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr and Foreman a call at 404-685-4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.